keep the hotel empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for Danny and Elizabeth from the progressive pop rock band House of I. Danny and Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah.
Oh man, we're stoked that you're here. I know you made a little journey down here, and it is typical Florida monsooning out there, so yes. I'm glad you braved our monsoon to get here.
Literally, it was terrifying.
It was like lightning hitting everywhere around us. I really hope that lightning doesn't hit right in front of us as we're driving.
Yeah, I came and I said, yeah, it's Florida out there right now. Yep. So I know you guys are familiar with that. I know you've been around since about 2011 with your origins in Miami, but I know you're rocking it in Tampa now.
Yeah.
So start me at the start where House of I comes together.
You want to take that?
Sure. Well, we started in Miami. I was working with one of the other members, Kenny. I was working with his sister at a Burger King, and she was like, my brother and his friend need a drummer. She knew I played, and then we, you know, got together and we jammed. And then I don't know how long was it since the second.
I think it was only like a year because we met when we were all like, I was 15 at the time.
Oh, nice.
So you were like 18.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then like a year we jammed once, and you were like, wow, it's cool. These kids are playing music.
I don't know if I said that. I was a kid too, but okay.
Yeah, but you were like 18 is like a young adult at that time. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. So, I think you were just like, that was cool, but she didn't think too much of it at the time. And then a year later is when you kind of hit us up.
Well, no, I think you guys hit me up.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Either way. But then we got together again a year after that. And then that, like, I was like, holy smokes. Yeah, I need to do something with this. Because, I mean, it went from just like your regular jam and then coming back and then ripping like, you know, Pink Floyd solos. And I was like, whoa.
Did you guys have common influences at that point? What brought you together initially?
That's a good question.
I think at the very beginning, no. I think I was a lot more into like heavier things, and not like metal, but just heavier, like punk and, you know, like, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers and just heavier stuff. And then they were like, you know, the Beatles.
Nice.
And Radiohead. Yeah. And like, you know, things like that, which it wasn't my cup of tea. I mean, it is now, I guess. It's grown on me. But yeah, so a little different. But then it clicked.
So it was blending some influences right out of the gate.
Yeah. I think, you know what, though? I think one that was common was like the 60s, like Jimi Hendrix, like
that's
psychedelic
true.
Rock.
Yes.
Because it's funny that you say that because I've never even thought of that. But it is like, because I think our music taste now is so similar.
Right.
But back then, like, she was more into reggae. And when we met her, she was actually playing in like kind of a ska band. And we weren't even particularly like super big fans of that genre of music per se. But I just remember when we first saw her performing with that band, we were just like, she is an amazing drummer.
Nice.
You know what I mean? We were like, we want to play with her. Yeah. Which I still think, obviously. But it was just, I remember being blown away by her playing. And the band was really cool, too. It was kind of like a punk, reggae, ska band.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. We liked Sublime a lot. That was huge for us. Red Hot Chili Peppers was like the bass player that I played with at that time. He was nuts. And he was like around my age. So it was like crazy to see someone that young be that good, you know?
Right.
Actually, he's probably like a close to your, like, y'all's age. But anywho, well, yes, he was fantastic. And
still in Miami, yeah?
Yep,
yeah.
Still in Miami, which, again, that was another weird thing. Like, you know, punk reggae in Miami was kind of, like, reggae, okay. But, like, we had parts in those songs where it was, like, heavy. It was punk. And, you know, you could see it. So people were like, what is happening right now? But, you know, you just go out there and you do your thing. So,
right.
But, yeah. Yeah, and then after that year, I mean, it just kind of clicked. We just stayed playing together since.
Yeah. Really. Yeah, we've literally been playing since then. At least her and I have been. But yeah, we so the members were Kenny and another person, Serge, who he started the band with me and Kenny, and then we brought her on. And before she even started playing with us, we were rotating instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So like we would all play like drums, all play bass, all play guitar, which was not conducive to a live performance. You know, it's like,
sound good on paper though.
I would have enjoyed watching it. I've told him before. I'm like, that sounds cool to me. You know.
Yeah, it literally made no. It just didn't make sense. Like it took so long in between songs. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's what we were doing in between songs. It didn't make sense. So once we got her, it kind of solidified somewhat of like a everyone playing their instrument or whatever. And then that person shortly left afterwards. And then we, us three were playing for a while up until recently, but, mm-hmm. but yeah,
that's been like the thing, rotating members a lot, a lot. So,
well, how long were you from your first rehearsal where you felt that clicking to your first time that you played out?
Ooh.
I don't think it was very long, honestly.
No. I think they had Kenny and Daniel and Serge, they had, I mean, a solid set of songs already that okay. when I joined the band, it was like learning a set list. That was my job. And we just rehearsed a set list. So, I mean, I would say it wasn't that long, honestly. And then we were playing at like Churchill's down there.
The Wallflower.
What was the other one? Well, no, I never played with you guys at Gramps, right?
No, I never played there either.
Okay. But yeah, there was like and that's the interesting part of being from Miami. Wasn't a lot of venues for the type of music that we were playing because it's very much like, ironically enough, either like very heavy metal
right.
or Latin mm-hmm. music. And it's, you know, the in-between stuff is what kind of gets lost down there. So
yeah.
It was interesting growing up and starting there. So it was a lot of, we just want to leave this area. You know what I mean? Like that was something that we kind of identified pretty quickly because playing... Even Fort Lauderdale was more interesting sometimes, you know.
But yeah, did you feel like you were kind of on an island that far south, even though there is a whole bunch of major market around?
Yeah, and I always wonder if maybe I wonder if we were naive at the time because it definitely didn't seem like there were a ton of bands. I feel like it just, I don't know, it's like when we were playing at the time, there were only a few bands that were doing indie or doing like psych rock like we were at the time. Mm-hmm. And I just don't feel like ever, whenever I spoke with them, that they would ever mention any other venue. So it was like very, like a very isolated scene. Like,
right.
And I think it might still be that way now. I'm not entirely certain. I know there's a bunch of bands that are traveling from there to play up here a lot.
Right.
Like Palomino Blonde is one of them. Mold is another one. Yeah. But I don't know. I wonder because we don't really play down there as much at all.
Well,
know?
Geographically, it's just way down there.
Yeah.
Three and a half hours, 4 hours with traffic. I mean, even Mold, last time that they came up here to play a show, we talked to them about it and they said the same thing. They were like, no, I mean, same venues. There's what, Las Rosas?
Yeah, Las Rosas.
There's like that, you know, that, and then that even closed and then opened back up. So it's just like this weird thing that even if you get comfy with a venue, it's like you never know. I mean, Churchill's closing was huge in my opinion.
Yeah.
Down there, that was like...
It's unfortunate.
That was like a venue that like bands that were driving down there to play, that's where they were going.
Yeah, right. You know? Stomping ground for a lot of bands, you know.
And if you're starting down there, that's something that, you know, everyone...
That's the rite of passage.
Yeah. I played Churchill's, you know, and that's like, that was the thing. So that closing was, in my opinion, huge. So
how long did you guys play around Miami before you seriously started to consider leaving?
We played down there. We left when we moved to college, which would have been
like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, like maybe like 3 years. And it's, you know, sometimes we wonder if we would have stayed, if things would have been different. Cause when we were playing, we were like one of the younger bands performing, but we were kind of like an up and coming band there mm-hmm. at the time. And, we were starting to get a little bit of notoriety throughout like the scene and stuff. So, I felt like before we left, like we were getting a little bit known, at least as like to the people that were going to shows and stuff. Like we played one of Churchill's anniversary shows and it was a big show. There was like a ton of people and we can you curse on this?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we fucking cursed. Yeah, we fucking killed it, dude. Like I was so like proud. And
those
yeah,
are the best.
Yeah, it was a badass show, man. I remember
that show was so long ago and it's vividly tattooed into my brain.
Yeah.
Like vividly. Like I remember how packed it was. We were supposed to play a stage that was maybe like the height of this table, so it wasn't a big deal. But they were like, I don't know, it was something with the schedule or something, so we ended up having to play on the ground. And that made it so much more intense because you had people right in front of you and like they were going nuts. I mean, and again, like we sounded so different than the rest of the bands too. Cause again, heavy metal and like, you know, so it's just like we came out and people were like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe just as an aside, how much of a advantage or disadvantage have you found it throughout this time that you guys, I'm guessing are generally a little bit different than every band on the bill?
You see, like, as I've gotten older, I've struggled with this a lot because I think like in today's market, and maybe not even today, maybe this has been the case for a long time, but I feel like not having a sound to latch onto for an audience, someone listening, I think it makes it difficult for them to figure out whether or not they like it. You know what I mean? Cause it's hard to express. It's like, with certain genres, it's like, you know what you're getting from that genre. And I feel like with what we do, just because of the influences that we like, we tend to kind of do a lot of different genres, which I feel like can make it difficult for someone to latch on, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I like reggae, so Sublime made sense. Right. I like reggae, I like rock. Sublime made sense. I don't think, like, we don't mean to, but we just kind of don't do that. Like, it's whatever riff comes out, you know what I mean, that he's writing, and then it's whatever drum beat I think of, and it sounds how it sounds, and either we like it or we don't. And, you know, that's either we release it or we don't. You know what I mean? So it's like we don't really think of it in that kind of sense. Like, I guess you're talking, like, because we like Radiohead and, like, there's, Beatles, like, the Beatles that changed a lot too, and, like, things like that. So, but I don't know. I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic, and I'm like, I wish that I would have gotten the taste of just being in a kind of straightforward band like that, you know, where I just saw what that road looked like, you know what I mean? Where it wasn't like, I could tell, like, I don't know, like, I feel like most musicians could tell they're playing something and they're like looking out in the crowd and you could just tell where it's like some people are like,
you know, giving you that dog that's been showing a card trick look.
You know, that's cool. You
which is fine. You know, I think,
well, it takes both.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I feel like musicians like us a lot. I feel like musicians like us a lot are like artists, but like just the someone that might be a fan of just like music that they hear on the radio or something, I don't feel like we're probably the best band for them. And that's okay. Like I've accepted that, you know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of understood. It's like, we're, I don't know. I feel like I sound like a douchebag right now.
well, and that's what I was going to ask you, because I know everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people have particular feelings about this, and that's all good.
Yeah.
What do you think, if anything, makes it harder now for people or discourages people from being more open-minded listeners? Because I think you brought up a good point. When you are like a specific genre, you can always be to those specific people.
Yeah.
But when you're going to try to do your own thing, you're inherently asking people to be open-minded. And that's a little bit more of a hurdle now. And I'm wondering if you guys have noticed anything that you think is a particular barrier for people to be able to listen more freely now without having to try to pick a lane all the time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's that's a tough thing. Is like the music that I listen to that's newer, you know, I fall into this category as well where, like, I don't know if you've – have you ever heard of, like, Mac DeMarco or, like, Crumb? So, like, they kind of have a sound.
I know a big Mac DeMarco fan wherever is that
he's, like, one of my favorite artists. And, like –
and he does the thing.
He does the thing where everything kind of sounds the same. Right. And I'll be honest, at first I was just like, oh, this is whatever. But then as I started listening more, I was just like, oh, no, he's great. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it took time, but I don't know. It's – I just feel like there's – it's so hard. Like, I feel like what matters more than anything nowadays is you have to have a catchy song, like at least, you know, like one single. But then I think the marketing behind, like, the image of the band and that kind of stuff, I think that's very important. You know what I mean? And I think that's where you'll find a niche in what you do. And I do think that there's a niche for the kind of music that we play. I just feel like we haven't found it yet, you know, and we're probably not doing a great job.
Or they haven't found you yet.
Yeah. Yeah, but we do need to be better about that. I feel like we need to put more work into being creative in the ways that we put ourselves out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a whole new way of digesting music today that wasn't the case back in the day. Going to shows, going to record stores, that was a thing. And now today it's not. You have to hope that the listener is curious, I think. And I think that there's less curious people when it comes to music. You know, it's more of like, the radio isn't a great help. I feel like it was a little bit better back in the day. So listening to the radio was a big help. But now it's like you have Spotify or you have a thing where you go on and you're picking what you're listening to. So unless the person is sitting on a playlist, like just letting it rip, they're missing a lot of things that are happening. I mean, I am too. You know what I mean? Like I've been listening to the same music forever now, you know? But, you know, so it's like I could do better with that too. But yeah, I think that's a big thing, not being curious enough anymore, you know?
Well, I'm going to make it to this springboard back from out of Miami, but I got to take another diversion because you mentioned something that I like to ask artists about, especially ones that have had a little bit of experience pre and post the explosion of Spotify. How do you feel about the way music is released now, where you're almost incentivized, and I hate to say forced, to release a bunch of singles quicker than you would if you just stayed it on an album and put it out?
Yeah. That's something that we've had to learn. I feel like we're always like so late on this stuff So it was, like, this has been happening
that's why we're
for
because I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, we're terrible at this stuff, man. Like, yeah. Like the whole marketing and stuff, it's not really in our nature. It's like all we really care about is the music. So it's like that's what we focus on for so long, but unfortunately it's like we have to start focusing on everything. But to actually answer your question, so I feel like the way that music is released now, where everything is single based, I feel like unfortunately, it's like our attention spans as people, like the way that we consume music, is that they only have the attention span for that one song. And unfortunately, I love albums. Like, I still listen to albums. I just, like, and it's, again, I'm going to sound like a douchebag, but
we got some clouds we can shout at. I'll go off with you.
We, like, just started buying a bunch of vinyls, and I've just been ripping through vinyls, like, and I love the experience of it. And
right.
I think that may be the route to go back into listening to albums, but I just, you know, it just depends on what it just comes down to people, like, I don't know, spending the time to listen to an album. I feel like the bigger artists, like a Taylor Swift or like, let's say a Kanye or like a Kendrick or something, they like their fans will listen to their albums.
Right.
But for like a newer artist, it's like, it's almost like you need to get your fan base to want that first.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That seems so counterintuitive because it used to be completely the other way around.
Right. It's like you wanted a lot of content to give a fan base, you know, to have there available for a fan base to listen to, and then they could figure out like which songs they like or whatever. But now it's like, no, it's just here's singles, and then maybe in the future, if we have a big enough fan base, we can compile something together, you know. But I feel like it's a detriment to music, unfortunately.
I would be so bummed out if my favorite artist released singles and only singles. I would be like, what's happening? I want an hour long thing, you know, give me something. So I don't know. That's a very interesting thing that it's like, it does go down to like attention span. I think people are like, you know, it's almost like you need to prove yourself to me. Give me a single. And if it catches my attention, I'll listen to the next thing and I'll listen to the next
right.
thing. But mm-hmm. it's like, it's silly because a whole album, an hour's worth, if you like half an hour, that's a good amount of songs.
True.
You know, yeah. But you know, it's like, you like 50% of what I just released. And if I release the next album, maybe it goes up, you know, maybe it stays the same, but that's still a lot of music. So
yeah,
like,
and that used to be much more standard. I mean, even up into the 90s, you had like those first bunch of Weezer albums that were like 35 minutes long, you know, 40 minutes long max.
Right.
But you got another album every couple of years.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, it's crazy that's not how people listen to music anymore.
It is definitely different.
Yeah.
So when you guys are writing, do you generally try to write your songs with the idea of that you want to put them in an album format eventually, or you guys just write the songs and let it kind of go as it goes?
I would say like it kind of goes as it goes. Like, you know, I think putting together the next like EPs that we got was something that we thought of after all of the songs were kind of written and like, oh, like, look at that. These kind of work together. But I mean, I feel like we have sat down and kind of thought of how to order things, but mainly just as it comes, really.
Yeah. I think for the next EP that we're planning on releasing in August, which is titled Premonitions, so it just so happened that I've recently been like super influenced by 80s music, by 80s pop music. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to incorporate that into like my writing currently.
Fun.
Yeah. So a lot of like synth stuff. And it just so happened that like some of the songs that we've recorded recently also kind of have that feel to it. So we were like, oh, this kind of works together as an EP, but it wasn't necessarily recorded with that intention.
Right.
And honestly, we've never done that. Like, even for, we have an album out on Spotify called Alienation that we released in 2000, I think 17 or something.
You have it better than I do, or something like that.
It was literally just all the music that we had, even music that she had learned when she first joined the band. Yeah. We just ended up recording it finally and then releasing it as an album. I do think that it fits nicely together the way that we ended up tracking like the songs, like in terms of the list of it. But ultimately it wasn't like a thought out process of like, oh, we're going to like, let's do a concept album
or something.
But I really want to do that though. I think that would be really cool, you know?
Yeah.
But is your preference to continue to write stuff that ends up as EPs or albums? Or do you just, you know, if you got a one-off, we'll play the single game?
I don't know. I mean, I would be down to do a full, like, just sit down and really think of a concept album and then write music specifically for that. I would be totally down for that. But right now, like, we just, like, again, like a Pink Floyd, like, just come on, that's awesome, you know? Yeah. But I think right now it's just playing the game.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of artists, and that's why I like to ask this question. I don't mind deviating a bunch because I find that a lot of artists either feel that they're pigeonholed by the whole apparatus of it all and lean into it, or some feel that they're pigeonholed by the apparatus of it all and then try to fight it. And, you know, this is all varying results on that end of the pool.
Right. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I feel like with that intention of the album, I feel like the artist's best material is going to come out that way as well. Cause I feel like you're going to focus a lot more on what you're actually like putting into the songs to make them connect and stuff. And I feel like with that kind of intention, you're going to write better songs, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but...
Well, it's different for everybody, but if you can be that in tune to your creative process, these are the kinds of things. So I guess that's kind of more the operative thing there, the things you can notice about your creative process that help refine it. And for some people, it isn't just trying to write one song every 6 weeks.
Right, yeah. And for me, it's every year. It's so long.
Yeah. Well, that's how you feel. I think you do great, so...
But. Well, let's get our chronology Tarantino train back on the track. So you're just getting ready to leave Miami. What's that looking like? What's it like when you're like, you know what, we can't do this anymore. We're too isolated down here.
Yeah, we decided that we didn't like living down there anymore in general, just because Miami is such a crazy place to live. And we we missed our family and stuff like that, obviously. But we were just like, let's get out of here. The music scene is not that great. And me, myself, and her, the guitar player at the time, Kenny, we were both kind of going into college, so we started applying to places, and we both landed on Tampa. I went to the University of Tampa. He went to USF. I got my degree in marine biology. He got his in physics, so it kind of worked out that way, and then that's kind of where we started to play, like, local shows here. Like, the first show I think we ended up playing up here was... Oh, it was actually at University of Tampa, but... one of the gigs that we started playing, like, kind of like normally was Pegasus Lounge. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're still around too, but we haven't played there in forever, but
yeah.
And the old one.
Yeah. Like, and the old one by Bush.
Bush Gardens. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we moved up here, from then. And then after we graduated college, we just ended up staying in Tampa because we loved it. And now this is our home, you know, so we're definitely happy to be here. And the scene here is so awesome.
So much better.
Yeah, like I know you were speaking to Earth Girl about the scene, and they're totally right about that. Like, the scene here is so, they're just so supportive, and I've met so many cool people and like made so many friendships here just from, you know, just from playing music, which is, that's awesome. So yeah, it's been nice.
What was that like in the beginning in Tampa? Were you just like, oh my God, the hell happened?
It was a lot of learning, man, because again, just down there, you're very much to yourself in Miami. You know what I mean? You are kind of wary of anyone that walks up to you and talks to you. So moving up here, then playing a show, and then realizing, okay, like maybe we shouldn't leave right away after we're done with our set, you know, little things like that. And then, you know, making the friendships, talking to people, and then realizing, you know, like people are just nice.
You
know,
did you feel like you were kind of starting the band again at that point?
Yeah, we were. I mean, we...
Well, because of the bass player situation.
Yeah, we kind of had to drop one of our bass players that moved up to Miami with us. Shout out to Franz. Love you, buddy.
But, he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
But yeah, we dropped him, and then we ended up meeting... we ended up playing a Battle of the Bands at Crowbar with a good friend of ours, Jordan Esker, in the 100%. And his bass player, Emmett, we started making friends with him, and he's a great bass player. So we invited him to play with us, and then that's how he started playing in our band at the time. And yeah, I mean, it was after that whole, like, I guess, Battle of Bands thing, and we just kept playing, and we started to talk more to people. It just became easy, and that's where we just started playing a bunch of shows, and, you know, it kind of engraved ourselves somewhat into the Tampa scene and St. Pete scene.
And then it was like when we moved up here, we really focused on releasing all of the music that we had. So I would say that that was a big thing, too, because it was maybe 2 or 3 years of us living up here, and then we released it. So from there, like with Emmett, it was learning completely new songs. So it was like another shift in sound because now we had Emmett, which, you know, he's, you know, he's his own musician type and like things like that. And so that was interesting because of, you know, learning those songs and then starting to play that. And then it was like a whole another chapter, it felt like, after releasing. Because it was two. Well, why am I forgetting? House of IEP? Is that the...
Yeah, House of IEP and Peace Walker.
And Peace Walker, right. Yeah. So it's like once we released all of that, it was done. Like all the stuff that we had written, all the songs that I had learned, you know, it was out there. And then it was, you know, that kind of push of just let's... A whole new set.
Yeah, let's start learning some new tunes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was something else that happened when we moved up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Which has been a process.
Well, that brings me to an interesting question. You've mentioned having to rotate band members a couple of times. I know that a lot of bands go through that.
Yeah.
So can you describe to me maybe a little bit both what it's like, A, to try to bring new people into a creative fold, and B, what it's like to try to keep the nucleus together so that you have something to bring people into?
Yeah.
Because I know that can be a big struggle for bands. They lose members and they're done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, so... Starting the band with them and Kenny, who left at the time, he's, you know, he's like my best friend. So when he left, it was tough and it was difficult. So that, like, cause when I grew up, you would see these bands and they would be like the best friends and, you know, they'd stick together. And like, you just had this idea of what it meant to be in a band. So I just had that perspective, like as we, you know, came over here together and played and stuff like that. And then once like Kenny left and Emmett left, I was just like kind of heartbroken, honestly. like it sucked. Like I, you know, definitely shed many a tears, when they left, and I still love them and we're still cool and stuff, but you know, it is kind of like you lose that musical partnership that you kind of like formed with them. And I do miss that, for example, from them. And not that we couldn't do music together now, but it's just not the same as like being in a band with them, you know.
It's always a different dynamic with each person, no matter what.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. And then again, being like Kenny, I mean, he actually like would write songs. He would come to us with ideas. And then for him, I mean, like I play drums. I can't sing. I can't do anything else. So that's all I do. So I don't really help in that kind of way. You know what I mean? So losing Kenny sucked because it's like, and then again, the end of the chapter of those songs. And we're not going to really ever sound like that again.
Right.
Yeah. And that really sucked for me because I was like, man, I really like that melody for that one song. And we're never going to play that song again. You know what I mean? So,
right.
And then with Emmett, I mean, that bass player drummer thing that I had with him, you know, I mean, I don't remember the last time that I freaking looked at a bass player and just I'm laughing
because
I was
like, best.
Whatever that was awesome and we should do that again. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you know, it sucks to kind of lose that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also like their personality, you know, we were close friends as well, obviously. So it's like, they're both off in different states doing their own thing and stuff. And, you know, we're obviously happy. As long as they're happy, we're happy as well.
Right, of course.
But, you know, it was tough. It was a tough thing. And I definitely miss them. Like, I wish they were still, you know, around and stuff. But you know, it is life being an adult.
Yeah.
That's just
they
what
they had
it
to
is.
Make life decisions.
Stupid life.
But we were lucky enough to have met the other people that are now with us, which is Jaron Jammer. He plays guitar and sings, and he also helps write music with me as well. And he does his own thing. He also plays in a band called Sorry Barb. And I met him through Jordan Esker. He would just kind of attend shows. He was playing in a band at the time, but I don't think they were really doing much. But he, you know, I met him through him, like just in the scene or whatever. And according to him, he enjoyed the music. So
take his word for it.
Yeah. So just so happened that we became friendly like right around the time that Kenny left. So he came in and kind of like helped out with that. And that was a pretty smooth transition, honestly. Like he came in, learned all the songs. And then shortly afterwards, he kind of like taught us how to push forward with new material quicker.
Yeah.
Because we were so stuck on playing this set that was working well live that we were just comfortable with and we barely had to practice for and stuff like that. And obviously like also losing members all the time, you kind of want to,
it's like a defense mechanism. Yeah. You're like, what are the 6-7 songs that I can teach someone? Cause again, don't do notes. That's all on him.
Yeah.
You kind of go into that kind of drone of like, okay, these are the easiest songs, let's do it.
Right.
First thing we did with Jaren was that, and then very quickly he was like, so something new?
Yeah.
And then we were like, well, let's freaking do it.
Yeah, which was nice. That was a breath of fresh air. We needed that, honestly. And you know, we've been able to like, you know, write this EP and stuff and work on new music, which has been really nice. And then once Emmett left, we met Nathan, who she also plays in a band with, called TV Extra. They're amazing. And, he has another band called A Rainy Night In, and we met him through the scene as well. Saw that he played bass, and I thought he was a really good bass player, and I thought that he would fit well with us, and luck, you know, behold,
he did.
So they've been fantastic, honestly. I couldn't have asked for another group of people to come in and help us do this. And, you know, I obviously consider them, you know, creative parts of the band as well. So,
right.
I don't know why I just remembered. So Emmett played show. Jaren saw us with Kenny.
Yeah.
Kenny left, Jaren joined. And then when you said Jordan Esco, that makes sense because Emmett was playing with Jordan.
Yeah.
So they knew Jaren. Emmett was like, he should join. Then he did. Then he leaves because that makes sense.
So when all of this is going on, do you think that it's – do you ever find it potentially to be more nerve-wracking for you as the nucleus to try to invite people in? Or do you think that it's worse for the person coming in and they feel more nerves about it?
I would say us.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like, for example, thank goodness that Jaren was, like, he didn't get sour about it. He just said we should write new songs. Or someone else might be like, man, they don't do anything. They just drag ass. I don't want to be a part of this anymore.
Right.
Or Jaren just had the, you know, the patience to kind of communicate, well, it's time. And I have ideas, and let's write new stuff. So, because that can be the thing where it's like, you know, this is what we have. And, you know, again, pressure on him to kind of write more stuff and things like that, where, you know, thankfully Jaren helped a lot with that. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, that's always – because you don't know ultimately, like, even if you might be friendly with the person, you don't know, like, what kind of relationship you'll have, like, musically, like, if right. you're going to click. You
exactly.
know, that's always the biggest fear is, like – oh, are we going to click together? Like, and getting into that writing mode with somebody is very personal. You know what I mean? And you don't know how they're going to react if you don't like something. Or like we wrote a song together with Jaren, the first song that we wrote together called Searching for a Cure. And we kind of like he presented an idea to us. And I'll say I was pretty like particular about the way that I wanted it to go, like within what he was writing,
mm-hmm.
but it was like, I wanted it to be done a specific way where it was still a song with structure and not like a free flowing kind of sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
More,
yep.
Like, yeah. Like you wanted it more structured, less jammy.
Yeah.
And that was, interesting to bring to the table.
Yeah. Me? And he was super receptive to it. And it's one of my favorite songs now. So,
love
you know
it.
What I mean? Yeah. It was great. So yeah.
What do you think are some of the cornerstone things to trying to build the trust in a creative partnership so that sort of thing happens and people don't have the tendency to get precious about things? Because it's easy to do.
Yeah, I would say I just honesty.
Yeah,
really.
I was literally gonna say that.
Yeah, just honesty. Like, hey, like, I mean, it's not like you're a bad guy or anything like that. Because I feel like a lot of people take it personally.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's more of just like, hey, do we want this to be a good song? You know what I mean? Like, I don't get too stuck on, like, I want a drum solo every song. You get what I mean?
It's right, yeah.
like that. So it's just honesty, in my opinion, just being honest with them.
Yeah, I think as adults, too, it's like you kind of learn to take constructive criticism in a way where it's not personal. Because it's never personal. It's just...
Well, that's the trick.
Yeah, and it's hard to do that, I think, but... You know, ultimately, it's like you have to have the mentality of like, we're all trying to do something together to create the best thing. And if you have that mentality, then I think it makes it much easier to go into it with, you know, thinking like, okay, like if this idea doesn't work per se, then let's try something else. And I think what it is that people get kind of like, they have like an ego about, you know, like whether or not they wrote something, you know,
mm-hmm, of course
it's like, I don't care as long as it sounds good to me personally. So I don't care who comes up with the idea, as long as the idea is good, you know? So
Sometimes when I don't like, when I can't get a drum part, I'm like, whomever can play, can you just get on here real quick and just show me what it is that you're doing so that I can figure this part out? Because I like that drum part and I want to be able to play it, you know? Cause a lot of the time, like sometimes, like especially with like TV extras, he already had all of the drum parts. So I didn't write stuff. but I liked how it sounded already, and my intention wasn't to change it. You know, it was to right. learn what was there already. So it's like, you know, yeah, just whatever works for the song. That's the biggest thing. It's finding people who think like that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, do you find that that's the biggest thing, trying to keep the song first mentality?
Yeah. I would say so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, because otherwise you're just stroking an ego. You know what I mean? You shouldn't have that when you're trying to create something with a group of people. Like, if you're going to do that, then you might as well do your own thing, you know?
Yeah, be a right. solo artist, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I like to ask that question, how you navigate the line, because some bands will be a group of people, but one person will come in, like you said, with everything written. Right. And then how do you let everybody interpret it? Or this is going to be what I wanted to ask you next. How do you handle writing your songs? Do you do it all in real time, or someone comes in with just a part and then you develop it always collectively?
It's been different, I think, like, so early.
Because I can think of a song where each thing had happened.
Yeah, it's been, like, more recently, it's been a lot more of a combination of things. Back in the day with Kenny writing, Kenny and I would just write the songs, and then we would kind of, like, this. And when I say song, it would be more of like, okay, this is the feel that we're going for. Here are the chords and the melody. And then we would kind of give it to her. She would write her drum parts on top of that. We'd give it to our bass player. He would write his bass parts on top of that. And then whoever was singing typically was playing rhythm. Mm-hmm. And the other person would add like the layers, the leads or whatever on top of that. So it was kind of like the song was already written and then given to just add the color to it. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
And then now it's been more of a combination of here's an idea. Let's expand on it together and figure out the structure of the song together. That's kind of what it's been more recently, which has been better for me personally because I struggle to finish things. Mm-hmm. So if I start an idea, it's very difficult for me to finish a song completely. And I feel like ultimately it's why a lot of my songs sound very different, like within the song. So it's like, I'll have like one of the singles is called 1989. And the beginning of it is kind of like an 80s pop song to me. Right. And then the ending is like a completely different sound. And I think that's where that comes from, is like, I do that a lot where I combine like different ideas, you know. I'm trying not to do that as much. I'm trying to like make it.
Is that something one can deliberately not do?
I don't know. That's why it's so funny. It's like, to me, it's like you're just following a train of thought, and it went there, then it went there.
That's, yeah, you know, that's how I think about it too. Is yeah. Literally my brain just does that automatically, but I'm trying to not do that as much, just to do something different, because I've done that for all my writing. So right. Now I'm trying to like force myself to do something where it's more simple and just kind of straight to the point. And honestly, I think limiting myself as well makes it harder, but it also makes me focus on writing something with intention rather than, you know what I mean?
Exactly. So, yeah. I've had a few people express that the more confinement they can kind of give themselves creatively, the more they can ultimately expand on it.
Right.
It's interesting. Sounds backwards, but yeah, because it forces you to think in one way. But 1989 to me, like, is one of your more like tame song, so that's pretty yeah. Shame too. Shame was one where like he pretty much had that song written, like yeah. It was like, here's the intro, this is what I'm thinking the verse can be, this is what I think the chorus can be. He probably needed like a bridge or like a break, and then that was it. And then like I remember like sitting down, and just the moment we started that song, it kind of just flowed. Like I was like, okay, there's the verse, there's the chorus, we figured out the bridge, and then just ripped through it. And like I think that was one of the fastest songs we've learned, but that was one I thought was very made sense. It was one sound and it kind of flowed. That's really good. Well, so.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, as long as that bridge section is there, otherwise you're gonna write 45 bridges until one of them fits. So speaking of 45 bridges and the way you guys write, this might be a good time to ask. I know you said your sound has evolved and it's definitely not where you started. If you could a little bit describe where you think your sound started and describe where you see your sound being at now.
I think it was more rock based back when we first started, because we were like heavily influenced by like the Strokes, early Tame Impala, like that early like psych rock stuff, Radiohead. So like those, I would say like that kind of sound. And then now I feel like I mentioned before, has been more 80s influence for me personally, and I think moving forward, I'll try and incorporate more like acoustic piano tones and stuff in there. Like I've been playing keys a bit more. Not super comfortable playing them yet, but I've been getting there, like practicing and stuff.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Just kind of trying to. I don't know. That's kind of an exciting thing too. I have no idea what the future holds for the kind of music we're gonna be playing. But I'm gonna try and focus on more simple and still with that psychedelic kind of vibe to it. Like I love ambient stuff. Like Krungbin, I've gotten into recently. I love Krungbin. Krum, I like a lot too. So kind of like that, almost like poppy psych stuff was cool to me, and I want to like expand on that a little bit in our own way, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess it would be like when they first saw me, they liked it, but it was a ball of noise. You know what I mean? Because again, I was very much into the '60s. Mitch from Jimi Hendrix,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah, then yeah. Punk, and then you combine those things and it, you know, sometimes it was like, you know, a little messy. So I think where I've headed to is just being a little bit more deliberate with everything I do. And just, you know, being a lot more focused on actually writing parts, which I didn't know that was a thing for drummers because I'm like, you know, just play the song. Right. But, you know, and I think it's going to help with that kind of Krungbin sound, you know what I mean? Cause it's, that guy is, he's a machine, you know yeah. what I mean? So it's like, you know.
It's like a drum machine.
Yeah, again, and he's very deliberate in what he's doing. So I would say that'd be like the biggest change that I've noticed in myself is kind of being more deliberate and thinking about things a little bit more. And again, TV Extras has helped with that a lot, the other band I'm in, because again, they're like very like 80s influence too. So I think it was very interesting to kind of go into both of those things together, but yeah, just very there, just very machine-like. And I like that sound, so it's fun to do, so.
Well, you brought up a really good point, and I don't know if you know who Devin Townsend is, but mm-hmm. I'm sure you know who Nickelback is.
Yeah.
Devin Townsend is a guy who's very famous in the prog metal world, and he's Canadian, and so is everyone in Nickelback. And he and Chad Kroeger happen to be very good friends. And Devin Townsend has a very prolific career in the prog metal world. He's been around for forever and a day. Not worth telling you the whole story. But he oftentimes will lament that he can't write these songs that are so accessible like Nickelback songs. And how is it that Chad does this? So I'm curious what your feelings are about how you navigate the psychedelic influences, the ambience, the punk, some of the things that are a little bit more coloring outside the lines with your ultimate goal of making music that's accessible. How do you walk the line between letting your creative be a train off the tracks, but knowing this train's got to get somewhere?
I mean, for me, like at least in drums, is realizing that people like a very clean sound. So even if I am playing punk, there's a reason why the Sex Pistols probably wouldn't have continued, even if they had the opportunity to, because people are now wanting a Krungbin sound, a Krum, you know, like clean sound. So even if I am playing a punk, once, like for Lyeska, once he starts singing, it's the little things, like I close my hi-hat, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking like that, like those are the little things that I feel like will help listeners. Cause again, listening to live music, like, you know, it can be a lot. So little things like that, like just making, like even when I record, just thinking like that, and so that it's easier to mix, so that again, it's cleaner, you know, and people will enjoy listening to it, you know.
So more dynamic control.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's the biggest thing for me.
Yeah,
drumming.
I think, and that's why I want to challenge myself in that way, because I'm like trying to do that more, and it's not easy to write a pop song, in my opinion. I don't think so.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think back in the day when I was younger, I kind of poo-pooed that, you know, I was like, oh, this is easy, you know what I mean? But then as I've gotten older, I'm like, oh no, this one's not easy at all. It's actually quite difficult.
It's suspiciously difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think when you go to do it on purpose, I think it's where it gets people, because then they sit down and they're like, wait, how do I do that? And it's just like, yeah, it's crazy that people can just do that, that they just think that way. It's very interesting.
I think, okay, so maybe it's this instead. I think maybe it's not difficult to write a pop song. Maybe it's difficult to write a good pop song.
Yeah,
One that actually captivates people, you know what I mean?
I thought that's what you meant.
Pop is not inherently good,
right?
In my opinion. But
But well, yeah. It's more that it's just sometimes pop will be the blanket term for music that's accessible.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that's popular.
Yeah, like the Beatles were considered pop of, you know, and I don't think the Beatles, I mean, for their time, sure, but I don't hear that when I'm listening to the Beatles. And it's always fun to go back to the Beatles and listen to them because, like, you just go, like, this was the biggest band of the time. And the music can be fucking crazy. You know what I mean? Like, right. It was so different, you know? And that's kind of, like, where our inspiration comes from to, like, be diverse like that. Like, the White Album or, like, Sgt. Pepper's, you know what I mean? But it's just, I don't know if people fuck with that anymore, honestly.
Well, yeah, it's weird. Everything's in its niches, I guess. But that actually brings up another thing I wanted to ask you guys about. You bring up the Beatles, who had some awesome recording techniques and weren't afraid to do things on their own and try some stuff. I know you guys employ some interesting recording techniques that you do spearhead on your own as well, correct?
Yeah, I mean, try to, I guess.
Yeah, so tell me about your recording process.
So, I've been recording music for a while now. I was doing it really just on a laptop for a long time with Pro Tools because we got it like early on when we were young. Pro Tools 10, I think. We got it from Kenny's mom. Thank you, Connie.
Shout out to all the moms providing Pro Tools.
Dude, let's go.
Seriously, dude. I didn't even know what I had on my hands, dude.
No, for real.
And I'm so glad that she gave it to me because I think we started using it like 17 or something like that. So I learned it very early on and I got to be super familiar with it, which is great.
Nice.
It's been so useful. But so we were just recording on like, I think at the time it was a four, just like a Focusrite, the four channel one.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved up here, we bought the eight channel. And that's kind of where we had like this storage unit in St. Pete that we would record everything at. It was also our practice space. And that's where we did all of our, basically the two first EPs and the album. That's where we did all of it. We just sat in that storage unit and just like, just fucking ripped through it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was fucking hot as shit in there.
Oh man.
No AC. Cause you know, obviously for like the sound bleed and shit, yeah. But
I think we had to redo a lot of drums too. Cause we had the four track and then it was a snare kick and then like, like overheads. Mm. And then once we got the H channel, we were like, what the fuck are we doing? Let's just redo. So that kind of brought us back. So we had to like redo a couple things, but you know, I mean, really, it's just sitting there and just moving mics around. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people are like, the recording process is magical. It's like, it's sweaty. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, one day the mic here works, and then the next day you try it right there, and for some reason the room is like, no, not today.
Right.
So that's like, you know, you have to sit there and really tweak it, but yeah, I mean, a lot of work.
Really. And you do 100% of that 100% yourselves?
Yeah, I think the only two songs that we recorded elsewhere was at Dark Matter, which shout out to them, they're fantastic.
Yeah, we did the drums there.
Yeah, we did drums there. For shame. At
that always helps.
Yeah,
because the drums are always the hardest.
And the sweatiest.
Yeah. The drums the sound that we got off Alienation, I wish we would have used a different snare because, like, it's such a meme now. Like, oh, my fucking snare shit. But yeah, that was literally the only thing that I didn't enjoy on all that stuff. But
I don't even use that snare anymore.
Yeah.
It's in a closet somewhere.
But
never to be spoken of again.
But we did those two songs there, which were singles. And then after that, everything has been done in-house at the little recording studio that we have now called House Records.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
How important is it to you guys to keep that stuff all under your own roof, literally and figuratively?
I think like ideally I'd like to find someone that I trust enough to take over that aspect of it because it's very like, it's very daunting. And I also feel like having a different perspective could be good. And I also want to find someone that's better than I am at doing it. Because I'm not formally trained. Like I just kind of picked it up just doing it like, you know, throughout my teenage years and stuff and
mm-hmm.
doing it now. I've never really like read up on it. Like Kenny actually read more than I did at the time. So I kind of like picked up from him. He was actually like reading things and like learning like, oh, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. And she went to school for it as well.
Yeah. High school. Yeah. Did some sound engineering, but I mean that, it helps only so much, like, you know what I mean? Like,
was it like basics, basically?
Yeah, it was basics, and then also like I went years without using it. You know what I mean?
So right.
Yeah, and unless you're doing it every day, you just it doesn't.
Everything changes so much so quick.
It's so
too
fast. Yeah, exactly. Like We were like, oh, yeah, we have Pro Tools. I'm like, cool, I should know this. And then they open it. I'm like, I have no idea what's happening in this version of Pro Tools. But, you know, like, you can look it up and stuff like that. So I've definitely, I've helped with stuff like that. Like, I know Pro Tools should be able to do this. Right. Like, figuring out how to do it and stuff like that. But, I mean, but, yeah, like you say, like, someone, if we could find someone that would want to take it over that we trust that's better than us, I mean, why not? You know,
yeah.
Honestly, like, I think, like, a producer that you can trust. I mean, come on, what, like, it helped the Beatles so much, you know.
Well, and that's
Radiohead.
Yeah, amen to that. That is one of the things that, you know, I do like to ask that question, because a lot of people have different feelings about it, not necessarily knowing what role a producer can serve or how it can help.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you yourself are, like, really good at it, if you're a very good producer and you can do all that stuff, then I think, like, hey, go for it. But ultimately, like, I think, if it's your music, I think you're so close to it that it also kind of makes it hard to really, like, be an unbiased person, you know?
Good point.
You're so biased against, like, what you're doing. It's like, I found myself hating it so much of the time. Like, I want to kill myself. You know? Like, I'm just like, this is fucking trash. But then, like, you kind of let it go and you give it some time, and then I'll, you know, come back, listen to it. And I'm like, okay, it's not that bad. But there's, yeah, I mean, I'll have 12 different, like, bounces, you know, of, like, different mixes and stuff like that for a lot of our stuff. So
many times it'd be like, Daniel, just put the mouse down, man. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's not done.
Yeah.
We just had a very good engineer friend of mine in here named Tristan Wallace, and he just mixed a record, and he said he spent a better part of 6 weeks mixing the record. And his significant other asked him, you know, this seems like a lot of effort. What are you hoping on this? He's like, if everything goes right and someone hears this, they're going to say to me, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
That's all you can ask for.
And that sounds good.
Then you know you have a victory on your hands.
Dude, that's all, like, literally.
Snare sounds good.
Like, if someone told me, like, oh, it's listenable, I'd be like, oh, my God, dude, thank you so much.
That's not even a real compliment, man. That's listenable.
I know, but I'd be like, yo, I love you. Yeah. Thank you.
Once you're that invested in it.
They take off their Bluetooth. Hey, my ears aren't bleeding. Yeah. Nice, man. Yeah.
Like, it's good. Victory is ours. Yeah.
I listened all the way through. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, and that, how do you feel like that? Like, do you, like, what's your perspective on being more formally trained and then someone that's kind of, like, picking it up on their own? Like, how do you feel about that?
My short answer to that question is I've been an audio engineer for almost 30 years. I'm visually impaired and I grew up in a studio, so I straddled the line of old days and new days. And what that has taught me is there is no wrong answer. If you can trust your ears, you've got the game licked.
Okay.
Everything after that is just the ability to be able to use what you hear better.
Right.
Make what's in your head come out.
Yeah.
It's just translating what you already have. The engineers that I know, and producers and musicians that are, have had the most success and the most fun, are the ones that can hear what's going on.
Right.
Because that takes care of everything else.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, yeah.
Ear training is super duper crucial. Yeah. Critical listening was my favorite thing in college.
Right.
If you guys ever want to do that for fun, just play music for one another and just sit there and listen to the mix and just don't say anything. And afterwards, what did you hear? What did you hear? And it's kind of fun to be able to find out, especially when you people that know each other well, find out what it is you heard and what I heard. I always think that's a cool game.
Like, if we say the same thing or not.
Yeah.
If I say, no, I like the snare. I hated that snare. What are we talking? Oh, my God.
Well, and it's things down to, like, you know, it's very cool that you guys do your own records. So it's things, too. You can listen to stuff like Beatles. And where it's mixed in mono is very powerful. It can be super powerful.
Right.
And if you can switch to the old tactics of mono mixing in the context of a stereo song, just for a little switch up, just even something like that can be mad powerful. But if you don't listen to an old recording and realize that all the drums are over here,
yeah,
all the vocals are over here,
right,
all the bass is with the drums and the pianos and the extras are with the vocals, like, you know what I mean? These are the kinds of things that just get kind of lost in translation over time. And recording is so fun. Like I said, there's no wrong answer.
Right.
So yeah, if you're going to, if you're flipping the table on me, my answer is there is no wrong answer. Trust your ears. And if it's fun, it's right.
Can I ask you a question? I'd be curious to see what you think about this. So we're big fans of the Pixies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something weird where I have this, like, infatuation with the way that it's, like, the way that the records sound, like those first three.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like they did this thing where they tried to sound like a studio sound. Like, do you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Do you think, why do you think they would do that? Like, do you think that it's possible for them to achieve, like, a unique sound again? Or do you think that it's kind of like they're kind of pigeonholed to, like, I don't know, maybe people that listen to music now? Like, I have no idea.
Well, and you brought up, that's a good point, before. A lot of music now, and you guys have noticed, it becomes like their fans are all musicians. Right. And the short answer to your question is, I can't say for certain, but you did see a lot of stuff in that time was tracked live. Everyone played together live. Oh. And a lot of those older records from that era, whether it's Queens of the Stone Age or Korn or Limp Bizkit or the Pixies or any of these bands that tracked it all live, all at the same time, I think there's a humongous amount of magic in that that's lost, because nowadays nobody does it. Slash did it with the record that Gibson, he put out on Gibson's record label. They tracked that one live to deliberately be old school like that. But honestly, I don't know about that instance specifically, but you did see a big fork in the road there where lots of bands were recording live, and then a lot of bands started to go to multi-tracking, and everything cleaned up a ton in that. There's no more bleed.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because I feel like Radiohead, I'm pretty positive that they track separately. And I feel like although their sound is super clear and clean, it's never had that, like, studio sound.
Well, and there's all types of magic in the sauce. People do it, and you'll see, like, the rhythm section will track together live. You know what I mean? So the bass and drums have that. As you know, once the bass and drums get locked in, that's your magic foundation. Then you can start to multi-track and piecemeal around that. But, you know, there's no wrong. There's a million ways to skin the cat, and there's no wrong way.
Right.
I mean, we're also comparing, like, guitar, drum, and bass, and then you got Radiohead, who's like, let's put a violin in here for some reason. That's just gonna make it sound so much different.
So much thicker.
Like, it's crazy layers and stuff that they're doing. You know.
Well, we're definitely gonna have to have a part two where we can music nerd out a little bit. But we'll let you get out of here on this one with something fun. I know you got your EP, you said, coming out in August, so that'll be shortly after this episode drops. So you got a new EP coming out soon. And I always like to ask people this one, who got a new record on the way. Not because I want to find out who I think your favorite bands are, but because I like to find out who it is you think is the best gateway musicians to help your music get out there to more people. So if you could play an EP release show with two other bands, you can each pick one, that you think would be your best coming out party for this EP, who are the bands you'd put alongside you?
So it's got to match the EP a little bit.
Like, not locally, just in general?
Anybody. You can dream as big as you want. There's no rules.
Damn.
I'm not into rules.
I don't know. That's tough. I would say, like, Grizzly Bear during Painted Ruins. Like,
very specific.
Yeah.
So that
album, I would say, probably. And then...
That's a band name I haven't heard in a minute.
Yeah, I love them so much.
He really likes them. They're all right.
That, and because I feel like it also has there's a bit of, like, prog rock, like 80s prog rock. I don't know. Maybe I'd like to say that. The poster's like, I'm not gonna
do it. Quit today.
We're not doing it today. Probably, I don't know. Maybe Tears for Fears.
Dude. Oh, love that.
This is a good one. Yeah,
love that's that. Like, I love them so much.
Yeah. Tears for Fears, because it really goes with the 80s.
You know what, dude? Tears for Fears, definitely, now that I think about it.
I would actually say Crumb. I would like, that would be really cool for them to play a bill with us. So.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it'd match all right.
Head over heels, dude. Poof.
Oh, my God.
Bro.
Forget it.
We're going to listen to that. Forget it.
Oh, man.
The vocal takes in that song, forget it.
I love them so much.
On so many of their songs. Yeah. They're just ridiculous. And the fact that that dude's playing bass and singing, it's ridiculous.
Don't even get me started on bass front, man. We're going to go down an 80s rabbit hole. Yeah. You know that song the band Level 42?
Mm-mm.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll show you that. We won't get into it, but this is bass playing and singing that just seems like... Well, Daniel, Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming down.
You.
I appreciate you guys sharing so much. We're definitely going to have to do a round two where we're just going to go unabashed music nerd. Forget it. All gloves off.
So, I love that. Yeah.
Awesome. Nice meeting you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate
it.
Yeah.